We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Jetta Cameron, John Ritchie. It's 94 WIP. Today at 1:45, it of course will be Times Yours. Get the calls into the Times Yours line today, any day. Probably had some Markelle Fultz and Sixers calls after last night. I'm just guessing. James always knows what they are. Best of the best, as selected by Seltzer, will play today at 1:45. Get the calls into the Times Yours line, 625-6550. I'm getting confused. 65
years.
It's unbelievable. It really is. I don't think we give him enough credit.
There's a lot of numbers in my
head.
There
are three numbers that you have to remember.
No, that's not true. I have to remember 511 for Cy Young.
Yeah, there are three numbers you say almost every day. Times Yours, the contest line, and the phone number.
I have to remember Joe D with 56. I have to remember the other Joe D with 77. John Ritchie. Get back at it with Beat the Hammer coming up Friday at noon when it becomes 71-7. So there's a lot to remember. You know, you got to remember the uniform numbers of all these players. There's a heck of a lot to remember. All right, let's welcome in the Hall of Famer, because we always remember that the Hall of Famer is on at this time. He is the best. He covers the Philadelphia Eagles. He's followed them since he was a child, and he is no longer a child. He is, in fact, a grown man. His name is Mr. Raymond Dittinger. Hello,
really
Ray
bizarre.
Dittinger.
Hello, guys.
How are you, Ray?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, it's because we knew Ray as a kid from the play Tommy and me. And, you know, Ray, how are you, man? Ray, this is we got fine fall weather out there today, wouldn't you say?
It's feeling like it's actually fall feeling bordering on winter.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
It sets up good for the Eagles and Carolina on Sunday.
That's okay, yeah.
You know, get a little chill in the air.
It's feeling like football, and we're getting to that point. We're getting to that time of the year where we're kind of sorting things out now, trying to separate what's real and not real. And you get to week six, week seven, that's about when the things start to take shape.
All right, so what is as your mind takes shape on it, related to the Eagles, your mind is telling you and telling all of us what?
I think I'm kind of optimistic. I know it's easy to just look at last Thursday night and just sort of dismiss it as, well, the Eagles beat a really bad Giants team. And, there's some truth to that. But I thought they played well. You know, I thought that, listen, if they had come out, you can make games against bad teams close by not playing well yourself. You can play down to the level of a bad team. I mean, you can fumble, you can commit bad penalties, you can trip over your own feet in the red zone. You can do all those things and keep bad teams in a game for a long period of time. But the Eagles didn't do that. I mean, for the first time this year, I thought they played a really complete game. And, I mean, the offense was good. They were really good on third down and in the red zone, which they hadn't been before.
Absolutely.
The defense played well. The special teams contributed. They were solid in all three phases. They started fast. They did all the things that they had been unable to do consistently through the first 5 weeks, and they did them all in one night. But the big thing to me was how good Wentz looked. I mean, I watched that game, and I said, he's back. You know, I mean, you saw glimpses of it in the previous games, but I thought he really put it together Thursday night. The first touchdown pass that he threw, the one to Jeffrey, where he runs away from the rush and he's on the full run and fires that ball into Jeffrey in the end zone for the touchdown. I turned to Seth when he did that and I said, that's him. You know, he's back. I mean, you could just see it. And I think that sort of spread through the whole team and lifted their whole level of play, which is what great quarterbacks can do. So, yeah, I mean, some people are sort of minimizing it, that it was just another win over, it was a win over a bad team. But no, I think it was more than that. I think that I'm not saying that they've totally turned the corner now, but I think they can at least see around the corner, which is a lot better than where they were 2 weeks ago.
No question. Coming out of the Vikings game. Well, right, let's get to it, because I agree with you on Wentz, and there's no question it helps us all kind of breathe a little easier. But the rest of the team, how sustainable do you think the level of play they had? They're not going to beat every team the way they beat the Giants. Not every team's bad as the Giants. But the rest of the roster, the rest of the roster is what? Like, meaning great? Like, okay? Average? Like, what are they?
Oh, better than average. But the injuries are significant. You know, that's the thing that worries me. I think they're a good team, but the injuries are significant. I mean, I don't know how much of Jason Peters is left. I don't know if you're going to, how much of him you're going to have going forward. I fear that at his age and with his injuries, that he will be a week to week proposition. That every week will be, can he make it through this game? You know, and will he be available for the next game?
Where he's pulling himself out.
Yeah.
You can't do that. We can't play with that. We don't know who our left tackle is going to be because he's going to pull himself out of every game.
John,
I hate that.
John's bothered by that, and it's impossible for me to know. First off, I didn't play pro football. I don't put myself in the position of guys that did.
Right.
You didn't play pro football. John did. But as someone who has observed it for years, are you bothered by Peter's in and out, in and out, in and out, or is it something to admire? I mean, it can go in totally different directions. How do you read the Peter?
Why would you admire
Well, simply
that?
Saying that he's trying to fight through an injury that maybe others wouldn't even try to play. Right. Ray, how do you read that?
I read it that he's trying as hard as he can try to be out there and playing. But if it gets to a point where he thinks that he's hurting the team, he's going to take himself out. And that's, I understand
that
what John's...
That would never even occur to me.
Yeah. I can understand that. I can understand that, but I've also seen it the other way. I've also seen it with other players who feel like, I'm going to give it a try because I might be able to give you four quarters today, and then get in the middle of the game and say, no, you know what? I can't. I got to get out of here. I'm hurting the team, and then somebody else has to come in. It's very, very tough for the rest of the team. It's very, very tough for the coaches when they start a game and they don't have any real sense of a guy being able to play the full, especially at a position like left tackle. But I honestly think that's going to be what you're going to have to deal with every week from here to the end of the year.
Ray, let me ask you a question. I want a series of statements here. Tell me if you agree with this mindset. This is my mindset right now as an Eagles observer and as an Eagles fan. I don't think they're going to get the number one seed. The Rams are probably going to get it. The Rams have a 3-game lead on the Eagles right now. Maybe the Eagles somehow fight their way to the 2-hole, but it's very unlikely. My mindset is this. The Eagles haven't played good. They've been okay. I mean, other than the Giants game. My hope is that they get to 9 or 10 wins, and that gets in the division, that they play better football as the year goes on, and that they are playing good enough that they can go on the road with Carson Wentz and win anywhere in January, and hopefully they get to that point. I'm not saying, like, throw the towel on trying to win every game. I'm just saying my mindset is they're not going to win every game. 10 is probably the best they can get to. That's where I'm at, hoping that they gel by December into January. That's just like the big picture mindset I have. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, totally. You've almost restated what I've been thinking is exactly that. I think that 10 wins is doable. It's achievable for this team. And with 10 wins, I think you win the division and you're in the tournament. And then it's just a matter of who you draw and where you draw them and how healthy you are at that point. But yeah, I think it seems to me that physically week to week, it's going to be a struggle, but what you're hoping is that you can get the thing together well enough that you can win your 10 games and get to the playoffs. And hopefully in January, maybe you're healthier. You know, maybe you've got Sproles back. Maybe you've got Wallace back.
Maybe the Rams are banged up.
And maybe, you know, and who knows? You know, the Rams could have, you know, maybe Gurley's not playing. Maybe they're not healthy. It's a lot can change. There's a lot of moving parts to any NFL season. But right now, I mean, the Rams look to me to be head and shoulders the best team in this conference, maybe the best team in the league. And nobody in their division is going to threaten them. So they're looking at they could be a 14-2 team, really. I mean, and so they're going to be the number one seed. But you know what? To me, it's not going to Los Angeles and playing in January is not that intimidating to me. The weather won't be a factor. I've never got the feeling that LA teams playing in LA have great home field advantage. If you're a good team, there's no reason why you can't go out there and play. It's not like Los Angeles has to come to Philadelphia where there would be a distinct home field advantage. I think, I'm not going to say it's neutral field, but it's certainly a winnable kind of game where you can go out to Los Angeles and play if you're a fully healthy team.
Totally agree. Let's go to the phones. We got Ray Didion here in studio with us. Show to camera, John Ritchie. Sixers reaction, Eagles phone calls as well. Let's talk to Everett in Fairmount. How you doing, Everett?
Hey, good, guys. How's it going?
Great.
Awesome. So as far as the Eagles go, I mean, I still think multiple changes need to occur across the roster. And I do have faith that Roseman will be able to make that happen. I also think we need to come up with new defensive looks across the board, including the secondary. But did think they looked a bit better last week.
Well, they looked better for sure, Everett. There's no doubt about that against the Giants. Yeah, they put it together that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also on to Fultz. I think John's being tough, but that's just how he is. But I mean, Joe, you know, fixing Fultz, just being in an athlete for the majority of my life, fixing Fultz is a long process, and it's just a question whether he snaps out of it. I do agree with you, Joe, that he needs a little more time, maybe a third to a half of the season. I think that is the point when we will know.
I think you're onto something there. I buy that as well. Everett, give me your favorite of all people that go by one name.
All right, just going with the theme of Halloween. It might not be a person, but it's Slimer.
Okay. Do you know Slimer, John?
Yeah, it's Ghostbusters.
Of course. Oh, okay. I have not seen that in a long time. Seen it a couple times.
I thought he was about to say not seen that.
Haven't seen it in a long time. All right, so you know what threw me off there in Everett's phone call? You know, sometimes we've talked about, and even today we're talking about someone that goes by one name. Sometimes we talk about people that go by two names, like when we reference them. You know, there's some athletes that we reference, and it's always the first and second name said together, like Bobby Jones. No one ever talked about Bobby Jones, the Sixers player. No one ever said, hey, Jones scored. Or you said Bobby Jones, right? I think Brandon Graham's another. Occasionally.
PG sometimes.
You'll get the nickname, but if you're actually saying one of his names, sometimes you'll say Brandon, and those of us around WIP know him personally, but no one ever says, who got the sack? Oh, Graham got the sack. You say Brandon Graham got
that's true.
Right? He's a combine the names guy. So when Everett just said Roseman, it actually threw me off because, Ray, it is very rare that you hear Howie Roseman here on WIP or anywhere in Philadelphia referred to as Roseman. He is usually either Howie or Howie Roseman. And he said Roseman. I had to do a double take. You agree, James? Roseman?
Yeah, I would say Roseman is definitely the least used.
Very
no
infrequent to hear Roseman.
Very rarely. It's you're right. It's either Howie or Howie Roseman.
Yeah.
You're correct.
I think because Howie is such a, you know, different kind of
it's
name.
It's a unique name. Yeah, it is. 94W, I mean, just not many of them out there, certainly in the world of sports. 94WIP, HD1 Philadelphia, live from the Tasty Cake Studios. Let's talk to Jimmy, who's with us. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
Monday afternoon, I was at my company's event at the Link, and Dave Spadaro gave such a tremendous motivational speech about Doug Peterson. It literally almost brought tears to my eyes.
Wow.
He was comparing the Eagles coaches from Buddy Ryan down. They're good points, and for people like Chip Kelly and Rich Kotite, they're bad points. But it just proved, and Ray, you've talked about this a lot, it just showed what a great leader we have in Doug Peterson, and I'm not worried one bit. And he especially talked about when Nick Foles was taking over, and he said, Nick's my guy. Anybody don't like it, tough.
Mm-hmm.
But I just felt that was just a tremendous speech about it. But I wanted to give you my my nickname or the one-name person.
Yes, who do you got?
You don't mind? Okay. He doesn't go by this, but when you say the word Mick, you know you're talking about Mick Jagger.
Yeah, that's true, Mick Jagger. That's true. All right, you got him. I mean, he certainly doesn't go really by just one name. It's, but, you know, get the point. Ray, let's go into the Doug Peterson thing. Your assessment of Peterson this year, and, you know, one of the things in the offseason we all wondered is, would Peterson be a sustained great coach, one of the most magnificent jobs we ever saw last year? Would he be a consistent top five type coach in pro football, or would he slide back to the pack?
Mm-hmm.
What is your early assessment of Doug Peterson post-Super Bowl, year three? Is he a sustained top five, top ten guy, or a sliding back to the pack kind of coach?
Well, I think he's... I think he's going through a bit of a transition now because I think the change on the offensive staff is something that he has to work through. I think the loss of Reich and DeFilippo has been felt by Doug. I mean, they were, that was a real partnership that they had there. And those guys were instrumental in helping put the offensive game plan together. Not so much the Sunday execution of the game plan. That was largely in Doug's hands, and he did a masterful job of it. But, you know, games aren't just won on Sunday. I mean, you can win or lose games Monday through Friday as well. And I thought that those guys really worked beautifully together Monday through Friday, putting the game plan together. And nobody's ego got in the way. You know, nobody felt like they had to have ownership of anything. They just, you know, they worked with the mentality of backup quarterbacks, which is what they were, which was, we're not going to get credit for anything here, but we still have a job to do. And I think it's one of the reasons why Doug and Frank were so good together, because they're largely the same guy who came into the building every day, every week with the same mindset. And so they worked together seamlessly. You take Frank out of the equation, I mean, nobody's making a big deal out of it, and Doug's not going to complain about it or cry about it, but I guarantee he misses him. He misses him, and they miss DeFilippo too. And that's part of the problem, is I think that, I'm not saying he doesn't trust Mike Rowe, but it's just different. You know, it's just different, and I think he's working his way through that. But I do feel that he's a good coach, and I do feel that one of the things that he has is really important in this day and age of the modern athlete, where I think he really does connect with his players. I think he really does understand what these guys are thinking and feeling from day to day, and he's responsive to that. I mean, he's one of the rare head coaches that you see in the locker room. You know, in today's NFL, very often the head coach, like, you never see him in the players' locker room. He's not there. It's like
I never saw Andy in the locker room.
Yeah, and Andy was another example of that. Of where it's just sort of like it's like a conscious thing. No, that's the guys. That's for them. You know, yeah. we have our coach's room. I don't have to be in there, because the guys will feel like I'm looking over their shoulder all the time. Lord knows I'm looking over their shoulder on the practice field. No, this is their place and their time. Doug is in the locker room a lot, and I asked him about that one time, and he said I don't go in there. I'm not in there long periods of time, but every day I go through there just to get a pulse of what's going on. And I think the guys are aware of it. And the communication and the simpatico between him and his players is unusual in today's NFL. But it works for him, because the players know it's coming from an authentic place. So, you know, I think he's a smart guy. I think he really understands how the modern player is wired. I think he understands that you don't treat every player the same. You treat players, every guy has to be treated and motivated a little differently. And I think on a day-to-day basis, he does a really good job of taking the temperature of his room, which is a big part of coaching. So, I mean, I had the same skepticism about his hiring as everybody else did. I mean, I didn't see that one coming, believe me. But after 2.5 years on the job, yeah, I think he's a really good coach. I really do.
Let's talk to Matt in Lancaster, who's with us. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great.
I was at the game last night. I was at the Boston game and Sixers game. I went to Boston last night. Just got back. Yeah. I'm frustrated over Fultz, yes, because Embiid's never going to be able to post up when Fultz and Ben Simmons are in there. That whole defense just collapses on him. And as soon as he got the ball last night, like, Rozier was right on him a couple times, blocked him the one time. The point guard and the two guard just drop right down, and they just smother Embiid in the lane. Like, he's going to have problems all year. Ben Simmons and Fultz, they just leave out there. Like, they're daring them to shoot it, and neither one are going to shoot it. It's going to kill us.
I think the Simmons non-shooting thing is a bigger factor than maybe even people realize. I mean, on one hand, he was great last night. On the other hand, it really limits the offense in the half-court sets. I mean, it really, and by the way, like, he will play a lot. Fultz, maybe they'll dial back, and maybe Fultz goes back to, you know, not playing a ton. Ben has to play a ton, and there's an enormous limitation there.
It's going to kill Dario, and it's going to kill Embiid inside. But here's another disturbing thing I have. I was telling your producer, like, last night, during the timeouts, Embiid and Simmons don't even talk. And it's weird. Like, there was two plays last night where Simmons drove the ball down, took it to the lane himself, and Embiid was on the wing, and he made a bad shot the one time, and B just stopped and looked at him and, like, shook his head and, like, really, like just, like, slowly ran off court. Like, and it's weird. Like, each time out, they sit away from each other. They don't talk. It's just, I don't know if there's anything there, but it's just weird to me. Like, usually the stars will talk in between, like, timeouts, and, like, it's just weird to me.
I hadn't noticed that. But Matt, give me a person that goes by one name.
Oh, Matt dropped off. I'll tell you
well,
what
he was there.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I did notice about Simmons last night from a communication standpoint. And I remember this from last year. I don't remember the player last night. I think it might have been Reddick. This is from watching on TV. John, there was a moment where someone talked to Ben during a stoppage of play. Probably a free throw is about to get taken or whatever it was. Someone's saying something. One of the Sixers players is saying something to him. And I just thought it was weird that Ben Simmons, and James, tell me if you notice this. Ben Simmons wasn't making any eye contact with the player, his teammate talking to him. He was just kind of staring off into the distance. And he's listening, but it was just like, it was weird. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember Ben doing this last year. It's like
he does it in interviews too.
Yeah,
when he's getting interviewed, he just kind of looks off into the nothingness and doesn't really look at the person asking the question.
It's like an odd disengagement thing. I don't know what's up with that. I don't know if it matters. I don't know if it doesn't matter. It just, did you notice that last night, John? Remember that from before?
Yeah, I think it does matter. You know, if you're not willing to look your teammate in the eye,
makes me
what's
like,
that say about, the, like, do you put yourself above
that's what
your
I wonder.
Teammate?
Does he think he's too cool?
Yeah.
Like, I don't.
That's
I,
what it feels like.
It does feel that way. And I'm not saying it is. I want everyone to understand. I'm not saying it is that way. I don't know.
I don't know.
How it looks.
Yeah. It's a bad look.
You know, Ray, what I'm saying?
It's a bad look. I know exactly what you're saying. I saw it in kind of what James is referring to. I saw it last year in interviews that when he was being interviewed, he just always looked off and he never made eye contact with a person talking to him, interviewing him. And that's, I mean, it's sort of rude, but you know, athletes may look at reporters that way anyhow,
sure.
You know, so maybe he's just more overt about it. But yeah, I mean, with coaches and players there, that's if you take that same approach to a coach or a player, then right. now it becomes a problem.
Especially because it's about, I mean, listen, I don't know what was said in that moment, but I guarantee it wasn't, hey, where are we going to eat? We're getting steak and potatoes or spaghetti and meatballs after the game. Like, they're not talking about that. It's something about the strategy on the court and communication, whether it's on the offensive or defensive end, right? They're trying, you know, the one guy, they're trying to strategize. And, John, you and I think a great example of this, like even in the show, during the show when we're talking or sometimes during commercial, I mean, we're looking like I might say something to you. You might say something to me, or we might have nonverbal communication where we got to understand, did the other person get what I said? You get a nod, you get a look, you can read the person's eyes. When Ben doesn't even look at the other guy, how does the other guy even know if he got it?
Well, he's in many ways, good, bad, or indifferent during the course of a game, he really is inscrutable. I mean, his expression never changes. I mean, he really is in many ways kind of a blank slate.
Yeah.
If you're trying to read him for emotion, good luck, because he's not going to give you much.
Yeah. It's...
But and that's not necessarily the worst thing. But the idea that kind of thing between him, teammates, and coaches, yeah, that's one I find is a little problematic.
Let's talk to our buddy Owen in Glassboro. What's happening, Owen?
Hey guys, it's my birthday today.
Happy birthday!
Besides having a Hall of Famer in there, you got me on the line, so it's a good day for you guys. hey, Ray.
How are you?
Let me talk about the Eagles. I'm great, great. Let me talk about the Eagles real quick. You were talking about Peterson earlier, like when he steps off and they can't play. What would you rather have? Somebody like dude on the Spurs, Kawhi, taking an injury and not playing? At least the guy suits up and tries, and if he can't, he doesn't hurt the team. So, I mean, I'm with him on that respect. But if I was them, I'd shut him down for right now. And let the other guy get some playing time and let him heal up for that late year run. Because him being in and out right now is just a waste of my time. You got one last year, dude. Just sit down for a couple games, get to the bye, and then we'll see what's going on with that bye set. That's where I feel about that. As far as the Sixers are concerned, they're the Colts and the Patriots are Boston. So, yeah, we're going to win 50-some games. We're going to be a third seed. We're going to be a second seed. But it doesn't matter because the team hasn't changed, and I blame it on coaching. And everybody's just playing about everything else. We're going to start with coaching. When you let Embiid go out there in front of, before the game, eating burgers and getting his nails done and watching Koji ninja rap videos and stuff on the court, making a fool of himself, you can do that stuff when you're playing against Orlando. You can't do that stuff when you're going against Boston and you get your cookies handed to you, okay? But that's coaching. When the coach is sitting there with his culture of losing, if Popovich had this team, what do you think Markelle Fultz would be doing right now? Do you think he'd be giggling on the sidelines, yucking it up? What do you think they would be doing?
Well, he wasn't doing that last night, though. He didn't do that last night.
No, but I'm saying at least he called timeout. But the team hasn't changed. And we got Brandon there who, man, why can't we get Jamal Crawford? Because the bench I'm looking at is garbage. You sign with
Suns for a year. We couldn't have got somebody like that, a fifth man of the year replay. Like, there's so many problems, but I'm sorry, with coaching in the front office. Would it be nice to have Bridges, the 10th overall pick on the team? Since our other people won't shoot jump shots, he's out there shooting jump shots. Somebody to draw somebody away from Embiid. So it's just from the top to the bottom, before we even get to the players. I don't know what kind of culture they're building there, but we're not developing as we were. Luckily, we've got two all-world talents that kind of developed themselves. And Simmons' problem is he's got an ego. When he doesn't look at people and he doesn't talk, he won't shoot a jump shot because he doesn't look bad. It's all about how he looks, and that's why he's a kind.
Well, I'll tell you what, Owen. I found it really bizarre at the end of the first quarter when Ben didn't fire up a three-quarter scored shot. I don't know what was up with that. He shot the ball after.
It was so weird.
It's like
he refuses to look bad. He's all about his image.
And then he fired it up after the quarter. The horn sounded. Now, is it possible?
Is it possible
he was unaware that there was 3, 2, 1 seconds left? Yeah, it's possible.
Last season he shot 11 three-pointers the whole season, and all of them were at the end of the buzzer, at the end of like the second quarter, third quarter, when he just chucked it up there, and it doesn't matter.
Really weird. Oh, and give me your favorite of all people to go by one name.
Sinbad.
Sinbad, that's a good one. John, did you notice that on Ben not shooting that ball up at the end, right?
Very conscious.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
What is that? I think it was a tie game at the end of the first. You got a chance to take a three-point lead. Probably not going to make it. Fire it up.
There's no downside. No one thinks you're going to miss. It was so crazy. And it was, I'm with John. I thought it was very purposeful. He waited till right after the buzzer sounded, and then he's like, oh, I'm just going to toss it.
I think it was purposeful, too. I don't know for sure, but my inclination is it was. Time's yours at 1:45. That's coming up also with Ray. We'll talk about the Panthers. It's a big matchup. Eagles and Carolina coming up, and we'll hit that with Ray coming up next as well. Hey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.